friends, church. So good to see all of you. For those of you who don't know me, or for those of you who forgot who I was, my name is Chris Ward. I'm the teaching pastor on staff here, and it's great to be back here. It feels like it's been a while. There's a reason for that. The last time I was scheduled to preach, I was about as sick as I have ever been before in my life. And so I am so happy to be feeling better and here with you. Happy New Year. I know I'm late to the game in that, but I haven't seen you yet. Happy New Year. And listen, this week we get the opportunity to begin or continue this sermon series that we started last week entitled Flourish, which is all about starting 2024 on the right foot. And so if you have your Bibles with you, you can grab them right now and turn to Hebrews chapter 12 is where we're going to be today. Hebrews chapter 12. Easiest way to find Hebrews, by the way, is to start at the end of your Bible and work backwards. It's towards the end of the book. Hebrews chapter 12. And as you turn there, this past week as I was working on this message, I was reminded of a story, an incident from my childhood that I want to share with you today. This is when I was in probably fourth or fifth grade, something like that. And those of you who have been here for a while, you may remember that I've shared with you in the past that when I was a kid, God did not bless me with the gift of sports, okay? I was a little bit of a chubby child. In fact, I had a grandma who at one point compared me to Porky Pig, which does wonders for your self-esteem, let me tell you. And so I wasn't all that good at athletics. At the very least, I really didn't like it all that much. Well, this story I'm going to share with you, it occurred when I was in Boy Scouts. And one of the badges that you had to get in Boy Scouts is you had to get an athletic badge. And so I remember one morning, our Boy Scout troop, we gathered together at a local park in order to do some activities to earn this particular athletic badge. And I'll be honest with you, I don't remember a lot about this morning. I think I blocked most of it out. But there were two events especially that I still remember. The first event that I remember is this morning we had to run a short distance. We had to run something like a 100-yard dash. And surprisingly, although I was a chubby kid, I was a little bit fast, especially over short distances. And so when we did this activity, I'm not going to lie to you and say I came in first place, but I probably came in third or fourth. I did respectably out of 14 kids, something like that. So not too bad. So that was one incident that I remember. The other event that I remember that we did, however, I was not as successful at. And that is because one of the other things that we had to do this morning is we had to run what would end up being the first mile I had ever run before in my life. And some of you can already tell that this is not going to end very well, and you are absolutely right. But we had to run a mile at this particular Boy Scout event. And if I remember correctly, what they did is they set up two cones a certain distance from each other on this field where we were gathered. And then what we had to do is we had to run like 25 times around these two cones, okay? And that was going to be a mile. And as I said, I had never run a mile before. I had never run a long distance quite like that before. And so I didn't really know how long it was. And I didn't know how to approach something like that. So you know what I decided to do? I decided to approach that mile like I approached the 100-yard dash. And so I remember we, all of us Boy Scouts, we lined up at the starting line, and then our scoutmaster was over here, and he said something like, ready, set, go, something like that. And not knowing what to do, you know what I did? I took off like Secretariat, okay? I started running as fast as I possibly could. And for the first lap or two, I was doing phenomenal. I was smoking all of those other Boy Scouts, you know? I was in first place. I was doing great. But then after a couple of laps, you know what started to happen? Fatigue started to set in, and I was completely out of energy. I was completely gassed, and I still had something like 23 more laps to go. And so began one of the most miserable experiences that I can remember from my childhood. In fact, this was so difficult that at one point, I actually remember I tried to cheat, okay? I tried to cheat. So every time we ran around one of these cones, we had to yell out what lap we were on. And I remember I was on lap 13 or 14, something like that. I think half my friends had already finished it at that point. And I was just over it. So as I rounded lap 14, I decided to yell out 16, hoping nobody would notice. Well, my Boy Scout leader, as you can imagine, he was, well, a Boy Scout, and he wouldn't let that pass. And so as I yelled out 16, he said, no, Chris, you're on lap 14. And incidentally, that's also why that morning was the first morning I ever said a swear word in my life. No, I didn't do that. No. But it was a miserable, horrible experience. Well, finally, after like an hour, I have no idea how long it took, I finally completed lap 25. I finished the race, and right after I finished that race, you know what I promptly proceeded to do? I threw up. I got sick. I threw up about a minute after the first mile I had ever run. So that's this first. That's the story of the first mile I had ever run before in my life, and that incident is forever seared in my mind. Now, why do I tell you that somewhat embarrassing story here today? Well, the reason why I tell it to you is because for as long as I live, I don't think I will ever forget what happened as we were leaving that Boy Scout meeting. And as we were walking back to the car, my dad, who had been there the entire time and he had seen everything that happened, as we were walking back to the car, as you can imagine, I was pretty embarrassed, right? I had just thrown up in front of all my friends, so I was really embarrassed. And so I remember my dad, he put his arm around my shoulder trying to comfort me. And he said something along the lines of this. He said to me, "Chris, it's not your fault." He said, "You've never run a mile before, so you didn't know how hard it was. To run a long distance like that, you need preparation. You need some warning, and you weren't given any warning. You need to know what it is that you are in for." And he is absolutely right. Listen, you cannot run a mile like you run a 100-yard dash. And you can't run a marathon like you run a mile, for that matter of fact, right? These things are difficult. And you need to be prepared for them. And what I want to let you know today, brothers and sisters, is there is actually a lot in common between a long-distance run like a mile or more than that, like a marathon, and the Christian faith. And today, we're going to see how we can be prepared for that. The book that I brought you to today in our Bible is the book of Hebrews. It's a really interesting book in our Bible. And it's an interesting book in our Bible for a couple of reasons. One of the reasons why it's interesting is it's actually the only book we have in our New Testament that we have no idea who wrote it. We have absolutely no idea who the author is, apart obviously from God himself. So that's one reason why it's interesting. The other reason why this book is interesting, however, is because as we read through the book of Hebrews, the impression that we are given is that the Christians to whom this author is writing, whoever he may be, they are on the verge of giving up in the Christian faith. They are on the verge of turning their back on Jesus altogether. In fact, look with me at verse 3 of Hebrews chapter 12. This is the last verse of our passage for today. And our author writes this. He says, "Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners so that you will not grow weary and lose heart." And the key there is at the end, "so that you will not grow weary and lose heart." And most scholars don't believe that this is a hypothetical warning that our author is giving here. No, these Christians to whom he is writing, they are about ready to grow weary and lose heart. They're about ready to give up on Christianity. And likely the reason for that is because of the difficulties that they are facing in their faith. You see, as we read through the book of Hebrews, the impression that we get is that these Christians are undergoing severe persecution because of their relationship with Jesus. And so they're tired, and they're about ready to throw in the towel. And so the book of Hebrews was written to them in order to encourage them in this journey of following Jesus. And that's why this book is such an appropriate book for us today, because let's be honest, brothers and sisters, the last few years have not exactly been a walk in the park. In fact, I stopped counting the number of Christians recently who have told me how the last few years have probably been some of the most difficult years that they have ever experienced in their Christian life. And I think, therefore, because of that, there are a fair number of Christians right now who are sort of privately wondering to themselves whether or not this whole Christian experience is all it's cracked up to be. In other words, I really think there are some Christians who are sort of saying to themselves, "Hey, what gives? You know, that pastor told me that when I came to Jesus, all my problems would be solved, and yet now I have more problems than I have ever had before. So what is going on here?" Well, that's why this passage is so helpful. Because among other things, what our author does in the passage we're taking a look at today is he tells us exactly what it is that we have signed up for when we sign up for the Christian life. And what he says may be a little bit surprising to some of us in this room. Pick it up in verse 1 of Hebrews chapter 12. Our passage begins like this. Our author writes, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us." Stop right there. And for our purposes right now, what I want to do is I want to focus in on the last part of verse 1. We'll come to the first part a little bit later. But I want to focus in on that phrase where our author says this. He says, "And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us." And specifically, there's one word that I want to draw your attention to in that statement, and that is the word race, okay? The word race. The Greek word translated race there is the Greek word agon, A-G-O-N, agon. And in the first century, agon was a word that was often used to refer to the long-distance races, the marathon-type events that were a part of the Olympics at this time. They obviously had Olympics in the first century like we do today. In fact, they're the ones that we got it from. And one of the events in their Olympics was a long-distance run, like the marathon. And that marathon, that race, was referred to as an agon. And that is the Greek word that is used here. Agon means race. And interestingly, men and women, interestingly, there is an English word that we still use today that is directly derived from this Greek word agon. And do you know what that word is? Some of you can probably already tell. What is that word? It's agony. Okay, our English word agony comes from the Greek word that meant a long distance race in the first century. You know what that means? That means the Bible confirms what I learned in elementary school, and that is that long distance running is a miserable sport and nobody should do it. It is agony, literally. That's what the Bible tells us. No, but seriously, men and women, seriously, isn't it interesting that the Bible compares the Christian life to a marathon? That the Bible compares the Christian life to a painful, difficult, long distance run? And in doing that, what God is doing is he is preparing us for something. And what is he preparing us for? Well, what he is preparing us for is he's preparing us for the fact that when we enter into the Christian life, when we become a Christian, we need to realize that the Christian life is not going to be a walk in the park free from difficulties. No, far from it. The Christian life is much more like an agonizing long-distance run. It's much more like a marathon filled with challenges and difficulties and obstacles. And I, for one, I think we need to start talking about this a little bit more. You know, if I had sort of a pet peeve with how the Christian faith these days is presented, especially to those outside the faith, and I've talked about this before, but I just don't think we in America, I don't think we emphasize enough the difficulties of the Christian life. You know, when we say things to unbelievers, like what I said tongue-in-cheek earlier, and I have literally heard some pastors say this, when we say, "Hey, come to Jesus and all your problems are going to be solved," you know what we're doing? Well, not only are we setting people up for failure and disappointment in the Christian life, but we're actually also lying to people. We're deceiving people. Because while following Jesus does indeed solve the biggest problem that we have in this life, which is the problem of sin and separation from God, following Jesus doesn't solve all of our problems. In fact, often new problems come along with following Jesus. I look at my own life. I think my life has gotten in some ways more difficult since I started to follow Jesus. There are sacrifices that I've had to make. There are tough decisions that I've had to make in order to align myself with God and his word. And I am convinced that I have faced challenges in my life that I would not have faced if I had not been a Christian. And some of you need to hear that today. A couple of weeks ago, I was talking to a group of people about some of the difficulties I've had, especially since becoming a pastor. And one person wanted to know about the nature of some of these difficulties, and so I shared a little bit about it with them. But then I said something like this. I said, "You know, quite honestly, if I hadn't faced any difficulties, I'd actually be a little bit worried. Because then I would wonder whether or not God was really using me. Then I would wonder whether or not I was actually running the right race in the first place." And I want to share that with you here today. You know, if you've been struggling a little bit recently, if you've been facing some obstacles and some challenges, if you've even been struggling in your faith a little bit recently, I want to let you know that is not a sign that you are necessarily doing anything wrong. In fact, that could be a sign that you are doing everything right. That could be a sign that you are exactly where God wants you to be, because the Bible is clear on this. The Christian faith is not a walk in the park. It's not even a 100-yard dash. It is a long race that requires endurance and perseverance. And so just like my dad told me in that park some 30-odd years ago, we need to be prepared for that. We need to be prepared for the difficulties that we are going to face. And by the way, men and women, and this is not explicitly talked about in this passage, but I felt compelled to say this this past week, we also need to prepare our children for this. We need to prepare our children for the difficulties that they're going to face in the Christian faith. You know, I think because my kids are starting to get a little bit older now, I'm starting to wonder a little bit more about the world that we are going to be leaving behind for our kids. And I can't say for certain what that world is going to be like, but I do think I know for certain this. It's going to be harder for our kids to follow Jesus than it was for us and than it was for our parents. And that's why we need to prepare our children spiritually for the difficulties they are going to face. That's why, and I know I'm going to get in trouble for this and some emails on this, but I want to say it. That's why I get a little bit frustrated these days when I see some parents seem to make sports more of a priority for their kids than their faith. When some parents choose, for example, schools, not based on what those schools are actually teaching our kids, but when they choose schools based on their sports programs, I just don't get it. You know, parents, let me remind you that at the end of the day, our primary responsibility is not to ensure that our children get an athletic scholarship to the college of their choice. Our primary responsibility is to prepare our children spiritually for the difficulties that they will face in this life, for the opposition that they will face to their faith. And we need to take that seriously. We all need to be prepared for the difficulties that we will face. So how do we get prepared, right? What do we do? Well, that's where the rest of this passage is so helpful. Because in the statement surrounding the statement likening the Christian life to a marathon, what our author does is he tells us what we need to do in order to run this race effectively. In other words, really what our author does is he takes on the identity of a coach, okay? Coach Hebrews. And he tells us what we need to do in order to run this race as well as we possibly can. And one of the things that our coach tells us is he tells us that we need to get rid of anything that would make this Christian journey any more difficult on us unnecessarily. And this is what you see in the middle of verse 1 when he says this. He says, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. Let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And the image that our author is using here is an image that is taken from the sports world of this time. Some of you probably already know this, but interesting fact, in the first century, most athletes, they would actually compete in the nude, okay? They would compete naked, which is an interesting image for church on a Saturday night, I know, but that's how they did it in the first century. And often what would happen is an athlete, like a runner, he or she would enter into a stadium wearing all his or her clothes. But then when it came time to run the race, they would throw off their clothes. Think of like a boxer taking off his robe as he enters into a boxing ring. And this was done so that nothing would get in the way of that athlete running that race as well as they possibly can. Well, that is exactly what our passage says we need to do in the Christian life. We need to throw off anything that would keep us from running this race as well as we possibly can. And what is it exactly that we need to throw off? Well, our coach mentions two things here. He says, one, we need to throw off anything that hinders us. And he says, two, we need to throw off the sin that so easily entangles us. And most scholars do believe, indeed, that our author is talking about two different things here. And we're actually going to begin with the second thing first because it's the most straightforward thing. One of the things that our coach tells us that we need to throw off in the Christian life is we need to throw off the sin that so easily entangles us. And what our coach is talking about here is very obvious, right? What he's saying is we need to deal seriously with sin in the Christian life. We need to do what we can to eradicate those things that God's word speaks against. In fact, I was reading this past week. I couldn't help but think of that great, excellent video that we showed at our Christmas Eve services. If you were here, you probably saw that video. You remember it. It's the story of Ray and G. We'll have a picture of them on the screen behind me. And if you remember anything about their story, you will remember that they came to Jesus following a life of drug addiction. And that's exactly what happened when they came to Jesus. They threw off their drug addiction. They threw off their sin. And that is exactly what we're supposed to do. But listen to me. Throwing off our sin is not just supposed to be something that we do the first time that we come to Jesus. No, it's supposed to be a continual thing in our life. Matthew talked about this last week, right? The throwing off of the old clothes, the getting rid of anything that would get in the way in of our relationship with Jesus. In fact, I'd encourage you to listen to Matthew's message last week because he did such a great job with this. But it's important that we do this. It's important that we deal with the sin in our life because listen to me. You know, the Christian life is difficult enough on its own, right? We just established that. It is a marathon unto itself. So why in the world would we want to make this journey any more difficult? Well, I'll tell you what makes this Christian experience more difficult. I'll tell you what makes life in general more difficult. It is our sin. In fact, going back to this image of a marathon, I was thinking this past week, can you imagine, brothers and sisters, can you imagine trying to run a marathon while also eating at my favorite restaurant at the same time, McDonald's at the same time? I mean, I can imagine that, but can you imagine that? Well, you know what? When we hold on to our sin, when we hold on to bitterness and anger and unforgiveness, and when we overindulge in alcohol and that sort of thing, that's exactly what we're doing. It's like we're trying to run a marathon while eating a Big Mac at the same time. And all we're doing, therefore, is we are hindering ourselves. We are sabotaging our own progress. And we are missing out on the flourishing life as a result of that. Because at the end of the day, brothers and sisters, there's a lot that our sin has in common with McDonald's. It may look good. We may enjoy it as we indulge in it. But often there is nothing but pain and discomfort afterwards. Trust me. I have dealt with a lot of discomfort after a meal at McDonald's, and I have dealt with a lot of discomfort after sin. That's why I wonder if 2024 can be the year where some of you really decide to take seriously the sin in your life and do what you can to get rid of it. Maybe this is the year, for example, where you begin to tackle your envy, your jealousy, your anger. Maybe this is the year where some of you resolve that you're going to tame your tongue a little bit more diligently and watch what you say a little bit more carefully. Maybe this is the year where some of you want to take dry January and you want to make it dry 2024. Maybe this is the year where some of you want to commit especially to celibacy outside of a marriage relationship and you want to tackle that pornography problem, or you want to stop sleeping with your boyfriend or girlfriend. Only you know what your sin is. Well, you and God, of course. But what sin is weighing you down, hindering you in 2024 from following Jesus? We need to throw that off. That's what our coach tells us. But there is something else that our coach tells us that we need to throw off as well. And you see that at the beginning of this statement when he says that we are to throw off everything that hinders us. And what most scholars believe that our coach is talking about here is he is not talking about sin. But instead, he is talking about morally neutral things, we may even say good things, that nevertheless can get in the way of our relationship with Jesus. Pastor Kent Hughes puts it really well in his commentary on Hebrews. He writes this. He says, a hindrance is something otherwise good that weighs you down spiritually. It could be a friendship, an association, an event, a place, a habit, a pleasure, an entertainment, an honor. But if this otherwise good thing drags you down, you must strip it away. In other words, brothers and sisters, unlike sin, hindrances are not universal. They are unique to each person. And what may be a hindrance for you in your relationship with Jesus is not a hindrance for me and vice versa. I had something like this in my life. I've shared this with you before. Some of you think I'm joking when I talk about this, but I'm absolutely not. You can talk to my wife. But there was a season in my life where I literally had to stop watching HGTV on television, okay? I had to stop watching that cable channel. And the reason why is not because I became obsessed with it, but the reason why is because I have struggled with envy in my life. And so what would happen is I would turn on HGTV and I would watch these House Hunter shows set in this magical land where $300,000 gets you 6 bedrooms and 6 acres. And I would begin to feel that envy rise up within me. And so finally I got to a point where I had to stop it. Because it wasn't helping me run this Christian race well. And probably all of us have something like that in our life. For some of you right now, what is hindering you is your phone and the amount of time that you spend on it. For other people, it may be true crime podcasts. For other people, it may be scary movies, it's golf, it's dating apps, it's shopping, it's traveling, it's vacations. For some people, it may even be exercise. You know, I know there are probably some of us in this room, our resolution in 2024 is to exercise more. Well, guess what? There are some people in this room that your resolution in 2024 may need to be to exercise less. Because even exercise can become unhealthy for some people. It can become an obsession that gets in the way of our relationship with God. And so not only are we supposed to throw off our sin, but we're supposed to throw off anything that would hinder us from running well the Christian life. That's what our coach says. But at the same time you hear that, I also want you to hear this, okay? The Christian life is not just about giving up stuff. It's not just about stopping stuff. We also get something in all of this as well. And what do we get? Well, we get Jesus himself. And he is the goal that we are to be running towards. And this is what our author makes clear in verse 2. He says, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and the perfecter of our faith, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. And the key there is at the beginning, when our coach tells us who all of this is for, it is for Jesus. And so Jesus is where we are to fix our eyes as we run this race. And what exactly does it mean to fix our eyes on Jesus? Well, the answer to that is found in the two titles that our author gives Jesus in this passage, when he calls Jesus the pioneer and the perfecter of our faith. And each one of these two titles tells us something different about Jesus. To say that Jesus is the pioneer of our faith, for example, is to say that Jesus is the example in our faith. And he is. You know, Jesus himself completed this race, right? That's what the rest of verse 2 is about. He faced difficulties, and yet he persevered. And so to fix our eyes on Jesus means that we are to do what Jesus did. We are to follow his example. Jesus is our example in the Christian faith, but Jesus is more than just our example. Jesus is also the perfecter of our faith. And you know what that means? Well, what that means is that Jesus is the one who gives us the help that we need to complete this race. The image that I thought of when I thought of this is the image of those water stations that are set alongside a marathon. I needed that when I was in Boy Scouts, right? And what we need to realize is that as we run this Christian faith, men and women, we are not alone. And that's because at any time we can look to the side and there is Jesus, just like that hand right there. There is Jesus ready to help us, ready to give us a cold cup of water, ready to give us what we need. And so we need to call upon Jesus and his help. And the way we do that is just through those short prayers that we pray throughout the day. I pray these dozens of times a day. Prayers like, Jesus, help me. Jesus, I need you. Jesus, I cannot do this without you. Let me tell you something. Jesus loves to answer those prayers. And so we need to call upon his help. And so that is how we run this race, brothers and sisters. One, we realize that we are in a race. We realize that it's not going to be always smooth sailing. Two, we throw off anything that would hinder us from this race. And then three, we focus our eyes on Jesus. We follow his example and we ask for his help. That is how we don't grow weary and lose heart. That's how we make sure that we reach the end. And that is my encouragement to you here today. That wherever you are and whatever you are doing, that you do what you can to make progress in this journey towards Jesus. You know, as a pastor, I get asked a lot of questions that I don't always know the answer to. And some of these questions, they take the form of life difficulties that you are going through that you want my advice on. They're questions like, Pastor, should I take this job? Pastor, should I date this girl? Pastor, what school should I go to? What school should I send my kids to? How should I deal with the situation with my wife, with my children, with my boss? And listen, I don't know the ins and outs of all those situations. I can't tell you exactly what to do, but here's what I can say, okay? As you think about those decisions in your life, and as you think about the other decisions in your life, the criteria that you need to use is which choice is going to lead me closer to Jesus. Which choice is going to move me further along this marathon that is the Christian life? Because it's when you have the answer to that, then you have your decision. You see, at the end of the day, brothers and sisters, the Christian life is not about perfection, but it is about progress. It's not about moving flawlessly, but it is about moving forward. And whether or not we move forward in the Christian life is entirely up to us, and it's entirely up to the choices that we make each and every day. That's why. Let's make 2024 the year where each of us commits to taking steps each day that will take us closer to Jesus. Can you imagine what that would do for our marriages? Can you imagine what that would do for our families? Can you imagine what that would do for our schools, for our work, for our communities, for our neighborhoods? You know, I get emailed a lot these days, Chris, the world is a mess. What does the world need? Well, my answer to that is very simple. The world needs more of Jesus. And we're the ones who bring Jesus to the world. So let's commit this year to be about Jesus, to do what we can, to continue to take steps towards him. And if you want to commit to that, I want to let you know, we as a church, we are here to help you. And we have several ways to help you in that. First of all, Matthew talked about this last week. Listen, we are here every weekend, okay? We do not take holidays off, brothers and sisters. We are always meeting every single weekend. And indeed, I do believe that one of the best things that you can do in this marathon in the Christian life is simply commit to come to church on a regular basis. You know, all the studies show that you work out better if you have a workout partner. Well, you know what you have here at Friends Church? You have hundreds, if not over 1,000 different workout partners to help you in this Christian journey. So as our Australian friends say, good on you for coming to church this weekend, okay? Double good on you if you came last weekend and this weekend. As Matthew said, last weekend, you're already above average, and so keep it going. So that's the first thing. Second thing, why don't you make this the year where you decide to get involved in a life group or Rooted if you are not already in one? Because it's in these places that not only do you find other people as well that you can go deeper with, but it's also in these places that you can go deeper in God's word. So that you can find out how to follow the example of Jesus, and so that you can find out how to call upon his help more. And if you're interested in being a part of one of our Rooted groups, they start at the end of this month. You can find more information online. And then finally, why don't you make this the year where you start serving here so that you can help other people along this journey of following Jesus? Because let me tell you something, okay? Sometimes the greatest way to grow closer to Jesus is when you're helping other people grow closer to Jesus. So why don't you make this the year that you commit to this church? Not because there's anything especially special about Friends Church, but because as you commit here, you will get help for your journey of following Jesus. And there is nothing that is more important than that. You know, as we draw things to a close here at Men and Women, there's one key phrase in this Hebrews chapter 12 passage that I haven't covered yet. And I've deliberately left it to the end. It's the phrase at the beginning of verse 1. We're right before our author says that we are in this race. He says something very interesting. He says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. See that there? He says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. Now, that's a really curious statement. What is our author saying here? Well, once again, the image that our author is using here is an image that is taken from the sports world in the first century. You see, in the first century, just like today, long-distance runs, they would end in a stadium. They would start someplace else, but they would end in a stadium filled with people. And so as you were running that race, as you entered into the last leg of that race, you would enter into the stadium filled with people who would be cheering you on, who would be applauding you as you were running around that track for the last time. Well, you know what our author tells us? Our author tells us that we have the same thing in the Christian life. We have a crowd of people cheering us on. That's what he means when he says that we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. But here's where it gets really cool, okay? Who is in this crowd that is cheering us on in the Christian faith? Well, the context of this passage makes it clear that who our author is talking about when he talks about these witnesses is he's talking about the people that he mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11, the previous chapter. And if you know anything about Hebrews chapter 11, you know it's a chapter in our Bible that is filled with the stories of the heroes of our faith, people like Abraham and Moses and Noah and David and so on. And so the impression that we are given, men and women, is that the heroes of our faith, Moses and David and Abraham and Noah and so on, in some way, shape, or form, they are in heaven and they are watching you and me. And every time that we take a step towards Jesus, even if it's a hard-fought step, even if it's a step that is taken through blood and sweat and tears, they are applauding us and they are cheering us on. Don't you want to make them proud? Don't you want to make Jesus proud? You know, when I stand before Jesus at the end of time, I want to be able to say to Jesus, not Jesus, I did the bare minimum to get in here. But I want to be able to say to Jesus, Jesus, I gave it my all. No, it wasn't pretty all the time. Yes, I was tempted to give up from time to time. Yes, I was maybe even tempted to cheat from time to time. But just like that run in Boy Scouts, I stayed in it. I wasn't perfect, but I was always making progress. I wasn't moving flawlessly, but I was always moving forward. It's like the last stanza of that great poem that Amy Carmichael wrote, Flame of God, where she says this. She says, give me the love that leads the way, the faith that nothing can dismay, the hope no disappointments tire, the passion that will burn like fire. Let me not sink to be a clod. Make me thy fuel, flame of God. And I love especially those last two lines. Let me not sink to be a clod. Make me thy fuel, flame of God. Here, who here wants to be fuel for the flame of God in 2024? Here, who here wants to run with endurance and perseverance the race that ends with Jesus? Well, let's make 2024 the year that we commit to that. That's why as we close here today, we're going to do something that we do sometimes here. And there is a phrase that I want you to say with me, okay? And the phrase is really simple. It's this. In 2024, I want to know Christ more. In 2024, I want to know Christ more. What a great declaration for the beginning of a new year, right? So I want you to say that with me, okay? We'll say it a few times and say it like you mean it. Ready? In 2024, I want to know Christ more. Again, in 2024, I want to know Christ more. Again, a little stronger. In 2024, I want to know Christ more. Two more times. In 2024, I want to know Christ more. Last time, say it like you mean it, okay? In 2024, I want to know Christ more. Who here wants to declare that? This week. Well, let's get out there and let's focus on Jesus. Will you stand with me as we worship together?